And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is August 23rd, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we have Doug Newsom with us, and we are going to speak about, 20 years since the passing of the beloved Princess Diana. Then we're going to talk about Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, trip to Moscow today, where he spoke with President Putin. And we're gonna handle also the subject: do we want to have Kurdistan back, or we want to let Iran rule over Iraq? Then we're gonna think about all those bikers that follow up on Donald Trump and his crowd. Okay, so let's start with the 20 years and memorial for Princess Diana. The day that Princess Diana went, when it was such a sad event, we all were really were touched. Nobody in the world could stop from tearing down or just remembering what a wonderful person she was to the universe, and how blessed we were all have been since she came to the world and she came to our life when she was so young and so pretty and so innocent. And then she took the world in storm and made everything possible to be a person and a righteous person before people, God, and Her Majesty the Queen. So let's listen to what Prince William and Prince Harry and Prince Wales interview they had, to say not long ago.
Your Royal Highness, congratulations on 30 years of the Prince's Trust.
You're very kind. Thank you very much.
Tell us how.
I can't believe it is 30 years. Do you know that
30
thing?
Years.
It is rather worrying. But I'm still alive.
Tell us about the different ways the Trust supports young people all over the UK.
Well, as I say, over 30 years, I mean, tried to find ways, meeting the particular needs and challenges that people face, and really aim to try and bring out people's best talents and potential. Because, like a lot of people, the talent is buried and has never been brought out. And everybody has something, I think. And it's just that business of giving them self-confidence and self-esteem. Mm. So all it is, I think, is an investment in the future. Mm. And that, has grown and grown now. So 66,000 businesses we started in the last 20-something years. There was one the other day who we started 20 years ago exactly, in 1986. And they started with £1,000 in their grandmother's attic.
Really?
And they're now turning over £30 million pounds a year. And they've got offices, in Los Angeles and New York and
brilliant.
London. I mean, they are fantastic. It's called Attic.
Right.
I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, you must be.
Now, the media nowadays often tends to demonise young people, and with terms like hoodies and thugs and things like that. I mean, they're all myths that the Trust has tried to dispel and to try and give young people back their self-esteem.
Exactly. But I mean, again, it's very easy, isn't it, to create stereotypes. Mm. I just know that there are a lot of people who appear like that, but underneath it all are actually uncertain and unsure of themselves and perhaps insecure. And as I say, all it needs a lot of the time is to provide them with motivation and self-esteem.
Yeah. Mm.
And suddenly they are transformed.
How important are William and Harry of keeping you in touch with what's relevant today and what's in fashion?
Right. I'm sure they think they're very important. I do. I mean, they are very good at keeping me in touch with what's going on a bit. And particularly on the sort of music front and things like that. I can't keep up with all the different new bands and everything else that bob up on the scene.
One you did miss was PJ and Duncan. They were very good.
No, they were.
When I was at school,
sir, they were brilliant.
Them,
sir.
Definitely. That's those
they
two.
Were. we had a very brief music career
in
a few years ago.
Very brief. Do you have quite similar music taste, the two of you, or are you quite different in taste of music?
We're quite similar. I'd say his was pretty shocking, but mine was quite.
Oh, really?
But apart from that, we tend to like the same, pretty much the same music.
Yeah.
These two, so you play this stuff, and I'm sitting there going downstairs somewhere. It's a whole place.
It's just like houses up and down the country. Yeah. Turn that racket down. Yeah.
And you've had obviously quite a few run-ins over the years with the Spice Girls as well.
Yeah.
They were great ambassadors for the Trust, weren't they?
Yeah, they were terrific. They really were, and great fun anyway. You know.
Would you say you have any favourite ambassadors, sir?
What can I say?
Spare our blushes, please. Yeah, no, spare our blushes.
But I'm enormously grateful because then a lot of them spend a lot of time give up their time to help with the Trust.
Yeah.
And they do motivate and inspire.
Yeah. Mm.
And one of the bands that the Trust did help was Journey South. Did you see that?
I did. I've heard about it, yeah. Right. I didn't watch that particular X Factor, but I think Harry probably watched most of it when I did.
I saw a couple.
You see that?
But I'm not going to admit to watching.
Yeah. But they've done really well. And if it wasn't for the Trust, they were in debt. They couldn't afford to buy any more equipment. But when they did, when they got a grant.
And now I think their album's out. I think it's gone gold or platinum or something. Mm. And you know, if it wasn't for the Trust, those guys wouldn't be there. So it's something to be proud of, isn't it?
Well, I think so. And I hope we can go on doing that. You know, but as I say, it is a struggle raising all the money to do it all.
Have you guys got the same sense of humour? Do you watch the same comedy programmes?
Yeah, we tend to do mostly the same sort of, we like the same sort of things. Although there's usually an argument over the remote control at home about who watches what.
I really
That usually goes on for quite a while.
Friends is always a safe bet.
Yeah.
The Trust is also linked very closely to sport and football in particular, and you've spent your time going up and down the country and visiting football clubs. Could you tell us a couple of the schemes that the Trust is involved with?
We've got the Premier League and the Professional Football Association, who've been wonderful again and helped us most generously. And, you know, I've been to Arsenal and Liverpool football clubs, and they've been terrific in helping this whole scheme.
Harry, you're an Arsenal fan, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's true. What's that supposed to mean?
And you're an Aston Villa fan?
I am indeed.
I mean, I can understand Arsenal. Aston Villa.
Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point. Exactly. Yeah.
We're doing all right at the moment, thank you.
Why did you choose Aston Villa as a club to support?
It was the first team I went and watched play an FA Cup game against Bolton. And I sort of decided that we were close enough to Birmingham to allow me to support it.
And you're also president of the FA as well now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a great job.
That's a great job. Yeah, loads of free tickets.
They must be pretty desperate, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's a real privilege actually to be president of the FA.
But the most important question: will you get a hand over the FA Cup?
If they let me anywhere near it, then yes, that's the plan. Yeah.
Well, it's the closest Aston Villa are going to get to it.
And Newcastle as well.
Yes, that's true.
Now, we know you three must be very competitive. You all play polo together, Team Highgrove.
Used to play polo together.
He's decided that the pressure of playing with his two sons is too much. We're too good for him now. Got to give in somewhere.
Well, I was going to ask, sir, which one's the most competitive?
They are very competitive, and I remember playing with them the last time I played with them in a tournament. We really wanted to win. And I get this stuff, you know, shouting at me, "You silly old father, get on with it." You know, the usual thing. And I was trying too hard.
Yeah.
That's right. But I was trying too hard, I remember, doing it. I had to turn the pony very fast. And the next thing, I mean, the pony came down sideways, and I must have landed absolutely smack on my head. Anyway, completely felled me. And I ended up being taken to hospital, you know, where I finally woke up. Seemed a long time afterwards. Anyway, this person here was told me later that he thought, when I was lying on the ground, that I was... He said, "Papa's just snoring," he said. And there I was, busily swallowing my tongue. Quietly dying. You remember, you told me.
I remember very well.
Can you imagine, they try to kill me so they can walk off with my ponies. That's
and the rest.
All right, we are on BBS Radio. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today is 20 years to the passing of Princess Diana, and we were listening to a very old interview that was taking place with Prince William, Prince Harry, and the Prince of Wales. And until not recently, they never spoke about their mother publicly, and they never took the time to grieve in public with us all. And now, after 20 years, they start opening up, and they have actually a great garden for her in her memory, and the garden is flourishing, is beautiful. But you know, if you could listen to the chit chat that they had, and they were very young, the painful expression on Harry's on Prince Harry's face was always there. And it was like the elephant in the room that nobody mentioned. And I'm glad that they are, you know, having a closure now. It's important to do so, because people do need to grieve. And sometimes, yes, publicly, because those are the people that makes this world happen. And we are really honored with them. I bless her soul. I hope that you know, that we cherish our loved one, and we really, really hold on to them and tell everybody that we love them every day, because that's the most important thing. So they know that you're there, and people have to live through this. It's not funny. Anyway, let's change the subject for a minute. Maybe we do that with a little music, so we can turn, you know, event. And there is one song that I put together today. I think that is the one in Spanish. It will be really nice to listen to. Let's listen to Il Diva. Right, that was incredible interpretation to Unbreak My Heart and of Braxton. I really, really like that song. Anyway, let's turn the page in history today. It's Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to Russia. He spoke and met with the President Putin there. It's a really good timing for the two leaders to meet, because it's important to start setting up the stage of the departure of ISIS from the region, the defeat of ISIS from the region, and making sure that it won't be replaced by Iranian troops on the ground in Syria. Now, Syria is really a playground of Iranian troops for quite some time, and I know that the Russian are there. And the Americans really play good with that. They didn't impose or didn't make up, you know, like a fight. They didn't pick up a fight or something. They really understood the gravity of the situation. And what we needed to have is a sort of a plan. And that's why Benjamin Netanyahu went there. Now, a few months ago, we had an interview on Eric's show with Minister Steinitz, Yuval Steinitz, who was a great leader in the Israeli government. And he spoke about the Iranian expanding into Syria and what the missile effect that they have can affect the whole world. So let's listen to that.
Well, there are new reports that Iran has successfully tested a major Russian-made air defense system. The military exercise, we're told, including testing the missiles that you see there. Russia delivered the powerful S-300 almost billion-dollar missile system to Iran after the Iranian nuclear deal with Iran was lifted. Russia at first, back in 2007, refused to deliver that system. But now that the nuclear deal went through, Tehran has it. What does this mean for the future of the Middle East and especially Israel? Dr. Yuval Steinitz joins us, senior Israeli cabinet minister of energy. Dr. Steinitz, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
How concerned are you now that Iran has this billion-dollar made missile system that can protect itself?
It's very concerning, and it's only another token of the massive military building up in Iran. That has to do with the Russian weapon supply to Iran, air defense, a sophisticated and long-term system. I think we have to be even more disturbed from the development of very long-range ballistic missiles, including intercontinental ballistic missiles that the Iranians are now aiming at, because there is clear Iranian attempt to be able at the end of the day, 2-3 years from now, to launch missiles, ballistic missiles from Iran to the United States of America. This should disturb you. This is extremely disturbing for us.
Do you think that Tehran will have the capability, as you said, within 2 to 3 years of potentially hitting the United States with an intercontinental ballistic missile?
That's what they are working on. You know, the entire Middle East is already under the range of their ballistic missiles, but now they are trying to enlarge the range, first to be able to hit Western Europe, but it might take another 2-3 years. They try to reach a United States itself. So whether it will be equipped with nuclear warheads or conventional warheads or chemical warheads, I don't want to see Iranian capacity to put direct threat to the United States of America. I think it should disturb us. It should disturb even the United States itself.
Yeah, but the Iranian nuclear deal, I mean, under that they were allowed to basically test ballistic missiles up to a certain range. And guess what? That range is from Tehran to basically Tel Aviv. Now you're saying they could widen that, and the ballistic missiles were even a part?
They are widening it, but another development, another...
Well, before we get to that, yeah. What would you suggest the United States do? How can we protect ourselves from an Iranian ballistic
missile? You should put enormous pressure on Iran by different means, because it's a violation not of the nuclear agreement, but of other Security Council resolution. It's illegal. It's in violation.
Well, they've routinely violated UN Security Council resolutions.
The Iranians are violating almost everything.
They get slapped on the wrist all the time. Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah. So I think that the world, generally speaking, the international community, and all the more so the United States of America, should put an end to this. But another challenge, which is forthcoming and extremely disturbing, is the Iranian attempt to transform Syria, after the end of the civil war, into an Iranian military garrison. And the big question is whether at the end of this brutal civil war in Syria, we will get on our northern border a weakened Syria or a stronger Iran. If Iran will manage to make Syria, the title will remain Syria, but it will be actually an extension of Iran.
So you're talking Iran.
It's dangerous for Israel, dangerous to Saudi Arabia and Jordan, dangerous to NATO, because you don't want to see Iranian naval bases in the Mediterranean, Iranian air force and ground forces bases in Syria.
Well,
and I think it's a great challenge.
They already are supposedly fighting there in Syria.
Yeah, but
you know, with Russia and on behalf of Assad.
Fighting is one thing. The Iranian plan, actually, to transform Syria into an extension of Iran, into an Iranian military garrison on the Mediterranean coast, on our northern border, this is extremely disturbing, and I think this is the next big challenge of the international community in general.
The next big threat.
And also of the United States of America.
This week on Thursday, your Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, is going to Moscow. He'll be meeting with President Putin in Moscow on this very issue, on Iran and Syria. Finally, what will the Prime Minister tell the President of Russia, and do you think that Putin will listen?
You could have understood it by now. The great threat to Israel, to moderate Arab countries like Jordan, Saudi Arabia, to Turkey, and actually to NATO, is the threat that Iran will manage to make Syria actually an extension of Iran. Nobody in the region wants to see Iran with direct presence on the Mediterranean coast. I think it's against the interest of NATO and the United States, against the interest of Israel, against the interest of moderate Arab countries. Now Iran should behave itself. You know, after the nuclear agreement, everybody told us that now Iran will behave itself. What we see instead, that Iran continue and even increase its attempt to destabilize the region, to create Iranian stronghold in Syria, and to develop longer range and even intercontinental ballistic missiles.
That is the challenge. Iran on your border, and Iran potentially threaten the rest of the Middle East and the United States, according to Dr. Yuval Steinitz, who is a member of the Israeli cabinet. Doctor, thank you for coming in with this warning today.
Pleasure to be here, of course.
All right, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Today we are talking about the problem that the region, the Middle East region, have with the accumulation of Iranian forces on the grounds in Syria. And sure enough, the army, the Lebanese army, went to the border of Syria and Lebanon in order for them to block any act of infiltration across the border of ISIS or Iranian troops, whatever. Because just remember, Hezbollah is on the southern border of Lebanon, and Hezbollah is connected to Iran forces. Iran forces are Shiite, which are trying to force their way around in Iraq. Actually, we have them controlling Iraq so far. And then you have the Saudis that are pushing their way from the south to go to try to keep the balance through Jordan and Lebanon and Egypt and Yemen. Now, in Egypt today, we had an accident. We're not going to talk about it extensively, but the foreign minister canceled a meeting with the delegation from the USA, which led by Kushner, because the USA canceled $100 million grant to Egypt, and Egypt felt that it's very offensive to them. So they canceled the meeting, but the president still is going to meet with the delegation in Sisi. I think that there is some kind of evolvement in the area, something that needs to be clarified. Just let's speak clearly. We have Syrian in battle for so long, and the Iranian had the opportunity to take a part of it. The Russians are covering for them, and Hezbollah is actually posturing to Israel. And the Lebanese army is in play. The Saudis are not going to be very happy. And I know the Jordanian king is all over the place trying to play right. And in the midst of everything, the Turks decide to fight the Kurds. You understand? Iraqi has three forces, and one of them, I guess, are the Kurds, and they were seeking to have independence country for so long. There are 30 million Kurds, and for some reason, Erdogan, the prime minister of Turkey, thinks that he can create a world without them. And he's forcing his way around with coordination with Iran at this moment. So let's listen to what they have to say about this. They have a referendum that must take place soon, but they canceled that today. So let's listen to it.
Just very last question, that's all we have time for. In Iraq, in Kurdistan, a referendum on independence has been announced by President Masoud Barzani for September 25th. I recently interviewed him, and he told me that Turkey is opposed not to the referendum, but to the timing of the referendum. So can you clarify exactly what your views are on this?
Bir defa ben, yani... Erbil'de yapılacak
well,
olan bu referandumu
this
doğru
referendum
bulmuyor.
That will take place in Erbil, I do not think it's the right thing to do.
Kuzey Irak
when it comes to this issue,
We shared this opinion of ours with the local administration in northern Iraq.
Kuzey Irak yerel yönetimi bundan çok pişman olacak.
The local administration in northern Iraq will regret this.
Zira
if they go ahead with it.
Barzani ve Kuzey Irak yerel yönetimi
Barzani and the local administration in the
north of Iraq, gibi,
they're not ready for this.
Irak'ın
and
toprak bütünlüğüne de aykırı bir adım.
Go against the territorial integrity of Iraq. That's the whole point that we make. It's to ensure the territorial integrity of Iraq. But when you take the step,
parçalamaya
it's as if you're saying I'm starting to divide this country.
Bu demektir.
That basically is what it
diğerleri means. Takip edecek.
And others will follow.
Bu bakımdan
no
biz buna
including here maybe.
Sıcak bakmıyoruz. Türkiye'de nerede olacak?
Where in Turkey? What will happen in Turkey?
Well, maybe Kurds in Turkey will get some inspiration from what's happening there. Maybe that's one of your concerns.
Şimdi bir defa bu tabii çok çok yanlış bir
well,
şey.
Well, that's not the
yani
right
Türkiye'de
thing to say.
Böyle bir adımı atmak sıkar.
Taking this kind of a step in Turkey is
Türkiye'de
an insurmountable challenge.
Böyle bir
it simply cannot be done.
Atacak olanlar şu ana
those
kadar çoktan atardı. Bak,
take, I mean,
çok ağır ödüyorlar.
They would have taken this step already if they could.
Türkiye'nin
they're paying the price for even thinking about
böyle
it.
Böyle bir adımı atacak ne zemini var?
There aren't the circumstances here in Turkey for that step to be taken. The structure what is necessary is not in place. In Iraq, there is a state. That state is taking that step. But in Turkey, you have the unitary state structure. So no one
ne gücü yeter,
has the might, has the power, has the capacity
bugün
to undermine
Güneydoğu'da,
that.
Doğu'da
in the southeast, in the east of the country, there is
herkes
no such problem in Turkey. Everybody
bölgedeki
is,
tüm halk birbiriyle
I mean, the people in that
yapıyor
region is living in peace,
orada,
coexisting peacefully.
Kentsel dönüşüm değişimlerle
and in that region,
birlikte,
we're also undertaking urban transformation projects,
inşa
and
inşa
we're
ediyoruz
actually rebuilding
Türkiye'de
that region. So the good thing about Turkey is the following.
Türkiye'de
in Turkey, there is no
Türkiye'de
Kurdism as an ideology. You have Kurds, you have Turks, you have
Boşnak
the Laz people in the Black Sea, you have the Boşnak Bosnian people, you have the Zaza people, but they all coexist in peace, in harmony. We are, but we are one.
Kardeşiz.
We are all together. We are all
farklı
brothers and sisters. We have fraternity.
Orada görebilirsin, ama bize göremez.
Maybe in Iraq things are different, but in Turkey this is how it is.
Bu adımlar sebebiyle Türkiye'ye
these
böyle
steps
bir şey
that we have been taking, I mean, that will never happen
böyle bir şeyde
basically
zaten
in Turkey,
fırsat
and
vermez.
No opportunity will be given to such an attempt.
All right, we are back. Let's think what Erdogan has to say. I know that with the interpretation, it's really hard to concentrate sometimes, but let me repeat it for you. Maybe I will have a better understanding with this double role that President Erdogan is playing. He's saying that the Kurds, 30 million of them, it's too early for them to organize. Like Iraqi is organized. It's organized in Barzani hands. Barzani hands is a Iranian born Iraqi Kurd, he's a Kurdish politician who, it's for some reason, Mattis, Secretary of Defense, went to Iraq yesterday, and they put off the vote for independence because Barzani was talking about the referendum and will say that he will go ahead if no stronger alternative will be offered. Now, America position, the U.S. position in the region become to be a little worrisome. I'll tell you why. First of all, you're giving power to the Iranian forces, which it's a no go for that for America. It's no, I don't know how to explain it to you, but people that want to kill you really don't make a good friends. So if they manage to alienate America for so long, how come we're giving them the power to take over Iraq? Now, the Kurds are on the right part of the game. They are playing right, and they are pro-America. Why don't we give them the liberty they deserve? And they are coming, and 30 million. And they are saying, the Turks are saying that it's too hard or too early for them, right? Too early for them to become a state, independent state, when we all know that Kurds are existing also in Turks. And for the audacity of the president, he said, there is no Kurdish ideology. It means that he actually made their ideology evaporated or dismissed it altogether, because they are in Turks are not allowed to be Kurds. And we know what he did after the coup. He went after them, that every time there was an attack in Syria on the ISIS, he went and he bombarded that section of the Kurds. It was repeatedly done against all odds. And what happens is that he's fighting them, and we are playing along with his game. But the audacity of him talking about the Kurds like this, when he's pushing Israel to be on accord with the Palestinian, that the Palestinian are only mercenaries that are holding hostage millions of refugees. You have to understand, this player is a dangerous player. And I'm telling you, if you can think it over, you think that American roles in Iraq, when she, you know, she stopped being there, when she evacuated all the troops, was a smart thing to do, because what else she could do? Donald Trump, President Trump, said that it was too early or not organized. President Trump, American troop war 10 years in Iraq. 10 years. We lost so many lives for that, for nothing. For nothing. Now they're still fighting there. You think they're going to stop? Are you going to be the buffer zone for them to, you know, to be under explosive all the time just because? And let them fight their own fight. Let them conclude it as they wish. And on doing so, you must all understand that this standoff that the radical extreme left wing losers decide to start punishing Russia because of whatever colluding they had, it's not going to resolve good. We need to unite forces all over the world to defeat the darkness. Let's have some music and we'll be after that.
Search for tenderness, it isn't hard to find. You can have the love you need to live. But if you look for truthfulness, you might just as well be blind. It always seems to be so hard.
All right, we're back. That was Billy Joel. Billy Joel had a show in New York last night. And what he did is he put the Star of David, well, not actually, the yellow star that the Holocaust survivor remember as the star that they were forced to put on their coat when they were in Nazi Germany. And Billy Joel wanted to demonstrate to the whole world that he's a son of parents, Jews, and sure enough, he is a Jew too. And he wanted to tell the world that no more is not just a sentence. We all stand together, the Jewish people all over the world. We stand together against Nazism, against all representation of hate, bigotry of any kind. We are appalled by it, and we can say to you all wherever you want, and those goons of the KKK that try to scare people out, we can tell you for sure, we're not scared of you. And we created a very strong nation called the Jewish state, Israel, which was built on the ashes of Holocaust, that was built from the survival of the Nazi regime, and was built from the love and care of people of freedom. And America is our best friends, and we are friends with many other nations. And today's the Russian is also in the right side of the globe for us. And we say to you, we are strong. We're not gonna let down any Jew all around the world. They all are brothers and beloved sister. And we're gonna protect them wherever they are. So if you're trying to mess with any of them, you just remember, we'll come after you. And we come in a coalition of force. We are all united against bigotry at these days. So Billy Joel, thank you so much. And as a brother, I love you too. All right. Now, let's keep on going. So we heard about Erdogan talking big talk about the fact that the Kurds are not ready. So let's listen to the Iraqi Kurdish leaders, what he has to tell to France 24. Let's listen to him.
Hello and welcome to Erbil. Welcome to this exclusive interview of Masoud Barzani, the president of the Kurdish Regional Government of Iraq. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello and welcome to Erbil.
Mr. President, you announced 2 weeks ago that a referendum on the independence of Kurdistan would be held on September the 25th. This is the first time a date has been set. Lots of people here abroad are wondering why now. The situation is still very volatile in the region. The war against Daesh is not finished. Obviously, there are troubles in Iraq, in the Middle East. Why did you choose to do this now?
Well, my answer to that question is rather, why not now? We are already very delayed. This has been delayed multiple times. If we wait and wait to solve all of the issues beforehand, and if we wait until the region is stabilized, we're probably going to be waiting a long time. And we probably would never actually be able to set a date for this referendum. Furthermore, this is for the good of our people and also for the stability of the region.
Is there a possible decision to postpone it or to cancel it, or is September the 25th the set date? There is no turning back.
This is a decision that is now irreversible. This decision has been made, and we decided that the 25th of September would be the date.
Obviously, you've seen lots of negative reactions from neighbors, such as Turkey and Iran, from allies, such as the United States, the European Union. Essentially, they're saying it's a mistake, it's not the right moment, please don't do this. I imagine you expected such reactions, but nevertheless, those are countries that have an impact on the situation here. What is your response to their criticism of your decision?
Well, personally, I have not heard any country, any European country, or the United States for that matter, speak out against the referendum. They have expressed concern regarding the fallout that may come from the referendum, though. The same is true of Iran and Turkey. They have not spoken out against the referendum. My answer to you would be the following. This is a natural right. Is it a crime for a people to decide to use a democratic and peaceful process to be able to decide on their own destiny. At the end of the day, the referendum will be a way to counteract potential disasters in the region in the future. Some people are saying that there will be issues because of the referendum, but I am saying that the referendum is actually a solution. Many people talk about freedom, human rights, people's rights. I speak to the international community and say, why not apply these principles to the Kurdish people?
You mentioned that there would be a catastrophe if this doesn't happen. What exactly do you mean by a catastrophe? There have been a number of catastrophes happening in the region. What do you have in mind exactly? Can you be more precise?
I do not know when this kind of thing may occur. However, the current situation is not sustainable between the central government and the regional government. We must do anything we can to avoid bloodshed, and if war were to occur, it would be a deadly war.
You're talking a bloody war. Let me ask you again to be more precise if possible. Are you fearing that there will be a war between your forces, the Peshmerga, and the Iraqi army? Or are you having in mind maybe some militias, especially the Shia militia, the Hashd al-Shaabi, that have been present, including not far from here? Is this what you have in mind? Can you be more precise, if you don't mind?
I cannot say this clearer. Relations with Mr. Abadi are excellent. We are coordinating with the central government. For the battle for Mosul, we elaborated plans together with Baghdad and with the international coalition. We had concerns at the beginning. We were worried that there may be friction between the Peshmerga forces and the Iraqi forces. But luckily, there was no such confrontation. In fact, the coordination between the forces was excellent, between the Peshmergas and between the Iraqi forces. But that doesn't mean that this situation will continue as is. I won't be around forever, Mr. Abadi won't be around forever, and there are other issues out there. They will need to be dealt with. So we are fearful of the future. Furthermore, there is a mindset in Baghdad which refuses any partnership. When you don't accept partnership, you open the door to other problems. This could lead to other wars, perhaps border wars, or any other sort of spark. This is why we wanted to leverage the current positive circumstances to hold this referendum. I don't know who this confrontation could be between, but I am sure that the current situation will not continue. We weren't able to be good partners. Let us at least try to be good neighbors. We had a constitution. It was a good constitution. We want this constitution to actually be applied.
All right, we are back. It's about the Kurdish regional government that actually was existed in the northern Iraq since 1992. So if you think about 2017 as a good distance of time since 1992, making you think that they might be able to actually work well on their own. And President Erdogan from Turkey said, well, they're going to jeopardize the integrity of the region. Well, actually, they protected the integrity of the region. They stopped the ISIS. You see, guys, they put their life on the online in order to defeat ISIS. And now that they're winning, they want to take away their freedom. I don't get it. The audacity of this Erdogan boys. I know that you guys follow him up all around and he's talking a big talk, but he's playing both sides of the games, and I'm really, really tired. We're trying to be good with them. We are playing right with them. The Israeli government really have no problem. I don't speak bad about their relationship, but I'm saying the Kurds has the right, and witnessing what they had to go through for all those years, I for some reason, I have so much sympathy for them. And trust me, they have good intention toward the world. They are not planning any, you know, bad fight. But I guess that they are stubborn enough to fight for their own liberty, and they have all the right to do so if they feel. Because in that region, when Iran is taking over Iraq too, you bet you want Kurds to be independent. All right, so we'll give them that. Now, we conclude on this note. I want you guys to recognize what happened in Italy, that they had the moments after the eclipse, the incredible eclipse that we all witnessed, which was incredible. There was an earthquake in Italy immediately after. So there was that sad moment where they had to evacuate those children under the rebels. And we all prayed for their good outcome. And sure enough, they saved the three kids from under the rebels. But the earthquake, which was happened in Ischia, on the island of Ischia, which is an island that is for tourism, is very well known. And he had many construction that was not legit, I guess. You know, people go to an island, build a little shack, and they think it's well and sustained, and then there is a little earthquake and everything crumbled down. So you never know. Sometimes there is a little tent that can last forever, and there is a little humongous building that can fall down. You never know that. But you do your best. So my sympathy is to the people of Italy at these days, and I hope that they will recover fast. And as far as the eclipse goes, I can't tell you the emotions that people had. You watch the people, they were crying, they were so happy, they were ecstatic. Because this is the wonder of the world. Every time anew, you just recognize that there is a God and it's not us. Every time you recognize that we are tiny people that just walk on this universe and we are blessed by, you know, the mechanism of this world. We go to sleep and we wake up to a sunshine. And then we have all the circle of the moon and night, and we all take it also for granted, like it's normal for us, it's all normal. But this mechanism, this wonder of the world, when you put a seed in the ground and there is, you grow a tree, or you plant you know, vegetables, and you have something to eat after. You guys understand what a blessing is to live in this earth. And we start the same time, you know, the eclipse, it means that the moon makes a new month. We started the month of Elul. Elul is the month before the high holiday in Israel, and it's the new year's coming in September, obviously. And because of that, we all are coming together and we all pray. And we all ask God for forgiveness, and we ask all our friends for forgiveness, because God cannot forgive us whatever our friends did not, because our friends are the, you know, they are the holder of our deeds. If you did good, they hold good. If not, it's your problem. So you better ask for forgiveness. So every year we come along for 1 month and we start to accumulate what we did. That's why probably the Jewish people are very successful, because every year you have to put you in order your life again for a month before, and then you start it. It's not like a one-year new year resolution and then everything is good. We have to think it a month before every day and pray for that. So by all means, I'm going to pray and send Donald and Doug Newsom best vacation time ever. We'll come back after in 2 weeks' time to talk to you back, God willing, happy and well. And I wish you guys all the best. And I want to tell you from Israel, the Holy Land, that we love you here. We bless you, and we hope for the safeguards of everybody and all the troops come back home safe and sound. We love you. All the best. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.